Hello, everyone. Welcome to the next episode of the podcast From Weak Resistance to Weak Avant-Garde. I am honored and delighted to have Baruch Gottlieb with me here. Hello, Baruch. Thank you so much for accepting the invitation.
Thank you for inviting me.
I am happy to introduce Baruch. For those of you who don't know him, Baruch is a filmmaker. I would call you also a hacktivist. I would call you also feminist scholars and theorists of technology, of multimedia, but also of society, politics more broadly, and of art. Baruch lectures in digital aesthetics at UDK Berlin and at Potsdam University of Applied Sciences. Also, he also curates at West Den Haag in The Hague in the Netherlands, which is a fantastic set of projects. I participated in one, which resulted in a very nice publication about, I would call it, alternative pedagogies, inspired by Freire, by bell hooks. So I recommend this publication. I think it's available online. You can find it and check it. Also, besides teaching, curating, and writing, Baruch's practice spans digital public art, interactive and generative media, sound and video. With Ji Yeon Yang, I hope I pronounced it correctly, Baruch co-founded the Sound Effect Seoul, and with Steffi Winkler, the Flusser Club. Also with Mansour Sis, Baruch founded the Laboratoire de Deberlinisation. I'm curious about that one. And also, you are a core member of Science Art Collective, Disnovation.org. Also, you have a PhD in philosophy, important information, and your first degree was obtained in Montreal, in Canada, but you live in Berlin, right? This is correct. And you published, this is maybe most important for people who like reading, you published several books, including Gratitude for Technology from Atropos 2009, A Political Economy of the Smallest Things, Atropos 2016, and I totally recommend this book for humanists who want to understand technology and ontology better. Digital Materialism from Emerald 2018 and The Most Human Condition, a Treatise in Eco-Communism from Delaire Press just last year, 2024, which is a book for which I was very excited when you were writing it and then also when you wrote it. And I would recommend that one, apart from like political and interesting and informative content, also because of the style, of the way you conduct your inquiry, your reflection, in such a way that it really, for me, it was a great exercise in thinking along with the author. So it was really, for me, it inspired me to rethink my own positions on a multiplicity of topics, but also whether agreeing or disagreeing. It's a book which sort of immediately allows a discussion. So the reader is really triggered, I would say, in a good way, to respond to your propositions and to be like for or against or with you or expanding or otherwise engaging. So, and I think this is also what your students must really enjoy in UDK Berlin, especially when they claim that you are a very like engaging lecturer because of those innovative formats of knowledge creating and producing and sharing. So welcome, Baruch.
Thank you for the lovely introduction.
Yeah, I tried my best, and thank you for helping me with figuring out the details of it. And also, I would like to ask you, so jumping right to the depths of this topic of the conversation, what is avant-garde for you? How would you define it, maybe, or do you have examples or favorite fields in which avant-garde is mostly present? How do you describe it?
So I guess I will start with how it used to be for me. So, I was attracted to avant-garde. At least I was attracted to surrealism, Dadaism, some of the, as when I started to go into film school, I was very attracted to the early experiments in the USSR, but also experiments like Ruttmann, Walter Ruttmann. So technical aesthetic, like avant-garde technical aesthetics, I guess in the end, like new developments in aesthetic technologies brought about new forms of artistic expression that were maybe not really considered art in the classic sense also. So in and of themselves, they were avant-garde in a way by opening up what was considered to be art.
So that would be the formal dimension, no? But there's also politics to it. So I'm curious, which, like, what of the political sort of dimension of avant-garde do you see, or when it became important for you? Because I know that at a certain point you became highly politicized human being, and so I'm curious, like, when did this kick in, if you would give us some.
Well, I mean, I don't know, like, if I would use the word avant-garde in so much in a political sense, except for, like, I mean, in English, we tend to use the word vanguard when we're talking about, you know, socialist revolutionary activity,
mm-hmm,
or militancy. So those people are in the vanguard, so they're in the front. But, you know, considering it that, yeah, I mean, if I think about avant-garde in terms of politics, I think it can go both ways, because, you know, considering that the telos of politics from a socialist point of view is kind of radical universal justice.
Mm-hmm.
And we're moving through all the difficulties, all the inertia of conservatism, all the baggage that we carry from previous generations towards this telos of universal justice, radical universal justice. And so everything that contributes along that line, it's okay, like, I'm being very, very classic here, that it is a progressive. And whoever's at the front of that progressive
direction, right?
Yeah, vector is a vanguard or avant.
Okay. That's a wide definition. It makes sense, I think.
Very broad. But as we well know, all the progress that we've made, as we can look at, like, in the queer rights or in feminism, as we made progress towards more just conditions,
mm-hmm,
various sectors of populations, there has been a reactionary movement also, which also has its own kind of inventiveness, and I would say even avant-garde.
Okay.
So I don't associate avant-garde necessarily with only good progressive position.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, and that's also quite original. In among my speakers in this podcast until now, the majority of respondents preserved this affiliation between avant-garde and progressivism, and communism specifically, or other versions of progressivism. So I'm gonna say I appreciate the novelty of this perspective in which conservatives might have their own avant-garde. But my curiosity now goes, and that will be the second question, into whether, artistically speaking, we can think of, like, conservative avant-gardes, or whether this avant-garde would be only in terms of, like, the social progression, the vector of a historical process, yes? So whether it would be this very general concept of avant-garde, or whether you could think of, like, conservative avant-gardes on the level of formal artistic, you know, choices and technologies and, you know, solutions of and forms of visual representation or otherwise.
Well, you know, like, it becomes kind of an interesting, for me, example to consider is, for example, futurism, right? Which is strongly associated with fascism,
plus
with a kind of militarism, with a crisis of capitalism, but not overcoming the crisis of capitalism, a kind of accelerationist. One. So it's embracing technology, embracing militarism, military technology, cacophony. And you can say that this is a kind of emancipatory in a sense of opening up realms of sensual expression or experience to in a more general public, formal, maybe institutional sense, where people will come to the concert hall and then be exposed rather then to melodious harmonies and things. You will hear the cacophony and shouting, screaming. And that would, and you know, there was a lot of theory about it too, about like also in enabling the audience, right?
Yeah.
Among the futurists, they wanted to get the audience
active or present,
right? Which mm-hmm. is not so different. I mean, it is different in their intention completely.
Yes.
From Albrecht is trying to
mm-hmm. activate the public,
activate the audience. So, I wonder, you know. I mean, they're both avant-garde in a way. I mean, however, one has a, I would say, a reactionary agenda.
Yes.
Purpose. And I mean, we can bring it up to the present in a way, like towards like punk or kind of, you know, where there is a kind of nihilistic side of punk. Which it's very it's certain scenes, which is really all about freedom,
like the freedom to be terrible or bad.
Or British. I'm sorry, but there is also the nationalistic punk kind of, you know, sector, which I think is something that you. But you know, you sent me after we had our last conversation, you sent me this article from Art Review about the strange case of alt-right gallery. In which the author depicts a gallery called LD50 in East London, and we were wondering, both of us, I think, in different ways, whether this is an example of some conservative avant-garde, this gallery, and then the artists that were presented there. I'm gonna start with my take on this will be that I don't see any innovation really in the format, in the formal decisions, in the formal choices of those artists. So somehow, technically speaking, visually speaking, artistically speaking, they don't bring novel solutions. So therefore, for me, they are not the avant-garde. They might be in the, like, politically in the vanguard of some kind of this more conservative political option of the alt-right. They might be, you know, as artists, I mean, being artist and conservative is already quite avant-garde, I would say. So, okay, I give it to them. But then the style, the forms of the artworks that are presented and discussed in this article don't strike me as innovative. And also in Poland, we had, you know, we had 8 years of conservative government. And at one point, the Center for Contemporary Art in Warsaw was run by a very conservative, I would say fascist director. And this director invited artists who had sentences in their countries. You know, they were sentenced for promoting fascism. And this director decided that he will invite them because they were censored in their countries or whatever. So he was using this discourse of freedom, of anti-censorship. But that was the only, maybe a bit avant-garde kind of part of it. Because formally, if you looked at those artworks, nothing novel was happening. They didn't invent, you know, anything. They were basically just... So for me, one of the main criteria of the historical avant-garde was formal innovation. And not only I didn't find it in those conservative artworks, but also I didn't find the search for such novelty in those artworks and artists. So they don't give them, you know, they don't care. They want to promote fascism, they want to promote racism, they want to promote ultra-conservatism, and they want to have the freedom to do it. Which is an interesting human rights topic, like to what extent the freedom of speech should be, you know, available for populations, but it doesn't have much to do for me with the avant-garde. So what would be your opinion on that kind of cases?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think besides the wanting to build up antagonisms in populations, in social context, they also want to create chaos and insecurity and maybe even fear or foment this. And that seems to be, you know, interested in a tendency towards actually, like, paradoxically, more police
mm-hmm.
and more carcerality.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, I would agree.
Mm-hmm. So it's
which is the typical fascist
initiative.
And tendency, because they also, like as you're seeing these days with Trump, that, you know, the official line changes from day to day, or even, you think, from hour to hour. So everybody's in a state of doubt and uncertainty. And in that sense, you know, people are in more of an insecure position and maybe desiring more stability in the form of authority. So I wonder, you know, like this tendency towards innovation, or the tendency towards radical self-expression, if that is really, you know, emancipatory in, or progressive in a universal sense, right? Like, I think it can be abused anyway.
Can I try to reiterate what you said, so that we see whether I understood your point? So are you suggesting that this search for chaos and this declarative search for freedom, which in fact brings more policing, would you call this a sort of innovative approach formally? Is that the point? Because that would be interesting as well.
I think it is like trying to create an unfamiliar aesthetic condition. Yeah, where things seem new, but of course fascism is really not new. And as I'm coming to think, you know, like actually I consider it kind of a cry bully position. You know what that is, like cry bully. You are a bully, but you're pretending to be attacked, or you're always complaining that people are attacking you, but actually you are the authority. So the kind of claim, the right-wing claim towards free speech is a position of privilege.
Yes,
being threat.
Mm-hmm. I see your point, because on the other side of the spectrum, let's say, of today's artistic productivity and production, are those artworks and process, artistic processes and exhibitions that I find interesting from the perspective of my own thinking about weaknesses. So as you know, I have this weak resistance concept, and then I follow with weak avant-garde. And I started to create it because I felt that the notions of avant-garde, first of all, the historical notion of avant-garde doesn't apply, especially to those feminist artists who are very anti-patriarchal and who also see classical avant-garde, the Russian avant-garde, and also, I don't know, Picasso and all those big male figures as white privileged men, often very patriarchal. So they want to detach, so those feminist artists want to detach from that tradition, and therefore they neglect avant-garde or even negatively respond to avant-garde. But then when I look at their artworks, very often I find elements of the classical avant-garde in this innovative approach to the form. Basically, they choose, for instance, everyday activities, mundane, you know, repetitive, reproductive work as the core form of artwork, and they try to introduce, I don't know, scratching potatoes in Polish gallery. Zachęta was a big scandal, you know, in 2003, I think. An artist from Gdańsk, you know, started scratching potatoes, and she was doing it for a week, like every day from 10 to 6 p.m. You know, she was sitting and doing this. And there was a big drama, you know, especially on the conservative side, like how she can do it. And for me, that would stand as a good example of the weak avant-garde, in a sense that she wanted to, you know, to introduce new art forms and also new objects, so, or new activities as artistic. But also she wanted to progressively sort of add value, social value, to add recognition to the housework. So she was speaking in the name of at least a part of feminism, I would say. And maybe also a part of like communist or leftist, you know, perspective on equality. But then she was contested very much as like extravagant, or as depreciating or devaluating the great National Gallery of Zachęta, where she was doing this potato. You know, it was the main Polish, like the core, like the MoMA in New York is for America. So for Poland, it's Zachęta, you know. So she was scratching those potatoes at the entrance of Zachęta. And that was a huge scandal. And for me, this would go for a weak avant-garde, because it's a different attitude also of the artist. She was incredibly modest. She wasn't trying to fight with the world. You know, she wasn't trying to say, my shit is new, your stuff is old. So basically, you know, so the weakness was present on several levels. So I would call her the weak avant-garde, and it's very different from this highly acceleration preoccupied conservative artworks or attempts at artworks that we were discussing earlier. So would you agree that we can discern this kind of or we can use this notion for some artworks, or would you be against it for some reasons? I don't know. Like, where would you stand?
Well, I think that in the case of feminist movement, avant-garde cannot be bad.
Okay. That's a strong statement with which many feminists would disagree, but...
Move forward.
Yeah.
And everything that is reaction and pushing back on feminist avant-garde, I think, is not in the interest of all women, or not to essentialize women, but women identify people. Then again, you know, we need to take Sophie Lewis's recent critiques into mind with enemy feminisms and, you know, the long history of things that have gone under the name of feminism, but actually were in the interest of only a very narrow section of women or ran identified, right? So there was racist feminism at in cities, and there is carceral feminism, right? So, and these can also be maybe seen to be avant-garde inside of, you know, carceral progressive socialist feminism, but all inclusive, right? So, you know,
it's interesting for me because somehow you manage, like, in every time we talk about it today, but also earlier, you somehow naturally, very naturally, expand the conversation about artworks onto the conversation about, like, general trends and behaviors within society, which is not a bad thing. That's it, you know. But it differs from my perspective, where I'm trying to discuss specifically the art field, probably because I think that there is something about the artistic production that might be useful or valuable or even inspiring for the rest of society. So somehow, you know, on one hand, I appreciate all those artists who are claiming that everyone is an artist and we all produce art and da-da-da. But then I get very specific when we talk about avant-garde. I'm like, okay, let's look at, like, gallery exhibited artworks. So I'm curious also about your attitude over there, because I noticed this tendency to kind of, you know, open the museum immediately. Like, when I mention museum or gallery, you're immediately, like, opening the doors and walls of it. So I'm curious whether it's, like, your system, your conscious choice, or whether it somehow happened in the last days that we were talking.
Well, I think it's been affecting the way I look at art as I become more committed to feminist movement and also committed to socialist movement. Over the last few years, I was getting very, I guess when we did the summer school a long time ago, I was getting into starting to go down the path of, you know, ecofeminism, the relationship between patriarchal exploitative attitude towards nature as analogous to the exploitative treatment of women and women by people. And of course, there is ecofeminist art, which has a hard time fitting into the art space, or being acknowledged as high art and demanding a new definition of what is good art. And I think there's also, like, or good institutional practice. And I've been really interested in these friction lines or these tensions that have been emerging with feminist art practices and feminist curating practices. There's a very good edition of the journal from On Curating, which is from Dorothee Richter, who also lives in Berlin now, called Instituting Feminism, which has a lot of interesting articles from curators and kind of arts institutional activists or militants, I would say, feminists, who are trying to insert other practices or trying to adapt the, let's say, what we have inherited, the patriarchal modernist institution that's used for contemporary art. How can we leverage this institutional inertia and also its, you know, recognition in the society to help support new practices, feminist practices in the arts, which may not be, not have such an easy time being recognized as art only the same way.
Yeah, I think feminist curating was also feminist approach to institution and feminist approach to museum as public institution was tremendously important, at least in the middle Europe. I know Teresa Stejskalova, for instance, who made several projects, and she published also one or two collected volumes about specifically that, about museum as public institution. And she was also a part of this collective, of this attempt to bring in a collective of women and children, 8 or 9 of persons, as director of the National Gallery of Contemporary Art in Prague. So as I told you earlier, they were quite well, positioned in this competition. They managed to get to the interview. Then eventually another person was chosen. But for me, the fact that the competition took them seriously and they actually were acknowledged as a possible director, as a possible collective body of director for this highly important Czech state-run institution, that is, I think, a step in the direction of feminism that you are talking about. And I believe also the efforts to, you know, to make the life-work balance. I know it's neoliberal concept, but you know, the balance between the effort and the exhaustion on one hand, and on the other hand, the ability to rest and stuff. So making the work relations also more balanced, more egalitarian, and recognizing the necessity of reproductive labor and its meaning and its importance. I think these were the main dimensions of feminist curating that I find incredibly interesting. And from the perspective of traditional art and art making and art exhibiting, people would call them weak, ironically or sarcastically, but I would call them weak as like, yeah, they come from the powerless, you know, the powerless people who are enforced by role, by gender divisions, whatever, by economy, to do a lot of reproductive labor. And then suddenly this labor becomes recognized, becomes central in the exhibiting. This is amazing. This is a very big change. And also I think it works for ethnic minorities, because a lot of this work is racialized, especially in Western countries. So then, you know, so I remember Eva Partum, whose work, by the way, made me think about Weak Avant-Garde. In 2006, she invited the people who were basically servants of the gallerists and you know, curators of the gallery who invited her in Spain. So those Spanish women and men, they had, you know, home helpers, I mean, nannies and, you know, cleaners from South America. So Eva invited not just those cleaners, but also their families. So often they had like 3 children and a husband or a grandma and 2 daughters or something. So approximately 50 people were invited to the openings dinner. You know, and the director of the gallery at first, the reaction was like, oh my God, I don't have the budget for this. But Eva insisted, because she invited those people also to do her collectively made artwork. They were kissing a piece of material to create a Spanish flag. So they were leaving the traces of lipstick, which is, you know, Eva Partum's kind of key gesture. So she expanded this gesture onto the people who are in the secondary invisible roles in Spanish society, the people who are household sort of, you know, reproductive laborers from South America. So they are also racialized very often. So those people, they did the artwork, and then Eva said they all have to participate in the dinner as artists who did the work with her. So she sort of expanded the notion of artist on this group of people. And then, you know, but it was the first time, she claims, that the curators actually saw themselves as like also exploitative, as you know, they needed to swallow this frog, metaphorically speaking, of like, okay, I have a servant from South America. I'm not such a nice person, basically. So it was a big confrontation. So I'm curious, like, and for me, this is also an example of weak feminism and weak avant-garde in the feminist way, because it's like expanding this concept of artist onto people who wouldn't be given the this position otherwise. So, yeah. But to close, are there any examples of avant-garde art that are produced today that you would sort of be happy to talk about? Or would you think that this concept is more historical and more political, so therefore it doesn't make a big sense to use it in specifically art context? How would you respond to that kind of request?
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of avant-garde, I like to connect to your proposal for weak avant-garde there and suggest that and go to, internal processes, or you were asking me whether, I can make a distinction between artwork and stuff that is shown in the art context and the life in general or social thing. There's a couple of things there. I mean, I think you already were discussing this distinction in comparison with Marina Abramović and Martha Ross Lewis, right? Two projects. And I remember also speaking with Susanna Milerska about one aspect of Abramović's avant-gardism, right? Which was quite male in her reading. In as far as that she was in the way that she subjected the audience without preparing them to some kind of experience which was shocking or disturbing,
yeah.
Supposed to, so they were not prepared, and they were, and it's kind of, there's a kind of bravado, kind of even a macho bravado about that, which fits well in the classic notion of a contemporary artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the patriarchal notion of it. Yeah. The patriarchal notion.
Yeah. Whereas you have other practices which, are much more subtle and much more consensual, negotiated, right? The classic one that's been written about by another one of your guests, Angela Dimitrakaki, the Woman in Work exhibition with Mirror Kelly and others. That work was produced with factory workers, right? Women, female factory workers, and was a failure aesthetic, considered not only by the artists, but by the workers themselves who visited the show, a kind of aesthetic failure. Yet it was an avant-garde work in the history of attending to reproductive labor and the presence of women in the workforce, and that's the importance of women in the workforce, contribution to social reproduction. Today, I mean, there's so many new practices that are emerging as feminism is developing all around the world, where in various different contexts, different exigencies are being explored by artists, and so in ways to intervene in the institution of contemporary art, by curators or in collaboration with curators and artists working in and outside of institutions, connecting the in and the outside, as Marina Vishmit was suggesting that we do. So I don't think now of any particular one that really stands out like this is the one. But of course, like I mentioned it again, if people are interested who are reading, check out this edition of On Curating,
yep,
on Instituting Feminisms, because there's lots of very exciting experiments that were done,
yep,
very recent ones, which including art production and curation, which I find very inspiring.
Yeah. And I want to stop you here and just finish the recording. This recording will stop automatically, so I have to do that. So I would like to thank you for this part of the conversation, and hopefully we return to that. Okay, so you wanted to close our conversation. I would like you to mention the exhibition that you recently made as an example also I think of feminist curating?
I mean, I was very lucky to work with Yang Ji-yoon again, who is the director of Alternative Space Loop in Seoul, the oldest nonprofit art, contemporary art space in Seoul, who also has a very interesting feminist curatorial practice. And in that sense, we were able to go very deep in our experimentation, making an exhibition where the artwork and the artists were not presented separately, but as much as possible together, so that the art does not have autonomy, artist does not have autonomy, but there's a social context in which both emerge, and that is featured in the exhibition space itself.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic.
Yeah,
it sounds great. And I remember that I think you invited also Marisa Stegbauer, no, to make the Sensoria, which is basically very performative, but also very transformative for the bodies, very relaxing, very kind of bringing inner peace and participation and a sense of participating in the world, which I think is incredibly, incredibly important. So thank you.
A little bit of risk and daring, because ever you're touching another person, then the social power dynamics are immediately.
Absolutely.
In force, right?
But this is what I like about Marisa's work, is that she's sort of so well conducting this kind of experimental settings that I think in most cases it really happens with the great benefit of everyone. So thank you, Baruch, so much for this conversation, and goodbye to all the listeners. Let's meet again soon.